This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is episode 239. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com. USA Today's NFL Wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And Seth, the record is, we have the same amount of wins. The Cardinals have the same amount of wins in 2019 after two games as they did in 2018. But this feels a whole lot different, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels a whole lot different. And they technically have one less loss, so there's that too.
there is that. In this edition of the show, we're going to talk about kind of what happened. So the Cardinals, they lost in week two 23-17. It was a lower scoring game than we expected, but it was a close game. The Cardinals started slowly, they come back, they are in position to potentially go down and take a lead, but they are unable to do so. They do not finish the comeback. A lot of things comes out of that game. They are now 0-1-1 on the season with one tie and one loss, and they come home this week to take on the Carolina Panthers. It might be without Cam Newton. That's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about that. So what's on tap for the show tonight? Recording on a Tuesday night. We're going to talk about whether or not we're more disappointed or pleased with the loss. We're going to talk about good and the bad on the offensive side of the ball, because there was both good and bad on the defensive side of the ball. We're going to talk about how much concern we have about David Johnson's wrist injury that kept him out of part of the game. We're going to look ahead, because the Cardinals' schedule has suddenly changed because of some injuries to some high-profile quarterbacks in the NFL. And then we will look ahead at the Panthers game this weekend, kind of preview what we know, what we can expect, and some matchups, and make a prediction. That's what's coming up in this edition of the show. Seth, let's go ahead and get started about this game over the last weekend. First off, obviously we don't like to see a loss. Were you more pleased with the results or more disappointed in the result, how things played out?
You know, it's one of those things that as the game evolved, I changed the way I felt about it, because at first you just wanted them to be competitive. We talked about that last week. We just wanted to see a well-played game, them have it, you know, to have a chance at the end. And that's what happened. But, you know, you kind of go back and you watch the game and you see the missed opportunities and things of that nature. And I think, and I wrote about it that night, I think the biggest thing that was disappointing to me is, and we talked a little bit about the first game, is how conservative Cliff Kingsbury seems to be. We expected to see this as a guy that would take chances, an analytics guy that would play to the numbers, and he did something that a lot of people have never seen, and that was kick three field goals inside the 5-yard line, which is like an analytical nightmare if you follow along with those type of things. And so it was that's what was more disappointing than anything, is that they were in the game because of the field goals, but at the same time you feel like they maybe could have been more aggressive and seen how that worked out instead. And it didn't. It was unfortunate. And at the same time, you are happy to have at least have that complaint of, man, if they would have just been more aggressive, maybe they win, as opposed to, it was a loss. It is what it is. Like last year, where I think the second game was, what, 34-0?
Oh, yes, it was bad. They got blown out. So the season opener last year against the Washington Redskins, the 24-6 loss, it was close-ish, but it was hopelessly far. because they just kept running the ball. They couldn't stop Washington. They couldn't do anything offensively. And then in week two, they just got the doors. I mean, it's not to the level of the Miami Dolphins this year, but it's pretty close how hopeless they looked. And it was that non-competitiveness that really early in the season did Steve Wilks in, a guy that most of us thought would be a good coach. They just didn't come prepared. And this year at least, they have fight. They come prepared. And
you know, they make really good adjustments at halftime.
They
too.
Do.
Something we never saw last year.
Right, right. And now, for me, I don't know if I'm more pleased or more disappointed. I expected the Cardinals to play this game. I expected more points. I thought it'd be more of a shootout because both teams' offenses were doing well. But the defenses actually played pretty well in most areas, both levels on both teams. I'm pleased with where the Cardinals are at now in terms of context. As we've understood this year to be, we're feeling things out. We want to see more wins, but more than anything, more exciting offense and being in more games, which is what we've seen. They've been in the games, at least with the Lions, they had to come back to do it, but they've been, each game has been intriguing. But at the same time, it can't help but be disappointed in thinking, well, they were inside the five four times. If they could have gotten one more touchdown, if they could have gotten two of those into touchdown, they're winning. And so we're looking at both games. We're a couple of red zone effective trips away from them being 2-0 like the rest of the NFC West. I was disappointed they couldn't come back, but I was pleased that they didn't get destroyed, they didn't get blown out. Obviously, I didn't like everything about the game, but I was pleased that they did not lose any progress made from their fourth quarter and overtime comeback against the Lions, because I thought if they went off onto the East Coast and just got blown out, it kind of would have taken a step back. And you know, people don't like to talk about moral victories. I wouldn't call this a moral victory. I would call it a step in the right direction, because historically the Cardinals just are non-competitive in these East Coast games in the early time slot. And not only were they competitive, they were in a position where they could have gone down and won that game. It just didn't happen. So I am pleased with the overall place where they are at in the season, but I'm disappointed that they couldn't have, you know, this would have made for a great start. You have the comeback in week one, and if they could come back and get a game-winning drive against the Ravens, that is the beginning. That it's a perfect storybook beginning to Kyler Murray's career. For you college football fans, if for those who follow Arizona State, it was that sort of thing that freshman Jaden Daniels was able to do against Michigan State, lead a game-winning drive late in the game to kind of establish as a freshman, or as in this case a rookie like Kyler Murray, hey, I'm a force to be reckoned with. This team is not going away, and we're going to steal some wins.
Yeah, and they're in, you know, a good pace, and it's looking better. It was a bit disappointing, the ending, but you also have to be excited about the fact that they're continuing to grow and think better. And like you said, that's a tough game in a tough place against a team that's, you know, really talented. And so when you look at kind of everything that happened, it was, you know, like you said, kind of a moral victory, a step in the right direction. But in the end, like, I think you can be okay being disappointed in it, because you're now changing your expectations for this team. It's not just they're going to get run out of the building every week or things like that. Now all of a sudden you're saying, like, hey, this is a team that can compete and should be able to win some football games. I mean, I'm not changing my 7 wins or anything like that, but they may be able to stack, you know, three or four wins over the next 5 or 6 games.
And that's true, because if you look ahead at the schedule, assuming they make progress like they do, let's think optimistically. The Carolina game, winnable. And if we want to look at the context, this is the situation the Cardinals were in a year ago. They had lost their opener at home. They lost the second game. They got to come back and play at home. And they get Bears game. And then it was disappointing because things just fell apart for Sam Bradford. And 2 weeks in a row, that the season's... win against the Panthers, they could, like, Seattle, they're 2-0, and they're tough, and they've made plays, but they haven't made any impressive wins. Their 2 wins have come by a combined 3 points. So the Cardinals could steal one there. That puts them at 2-1-1. They have to travel to Cincinnati. They're going to play Atlanta. They're going to play the Saints with no Drew Brees. They're going to play the Giants. So there are some wins on the table there, and obviously the schedule is going to get more difficult later on when they don't play at home at all during the month of November, technically, and a division that is, well, goodness, the 49ers, Seahawks, and Rams are a combined 6-0 so far. This division looks very tough. So yeah, it's kind of exciting to just know what's going on. On that way. Coming next on the Riser podcast, we're going to talk about specifically the offense, the good and the bad that we saw against the Ravens in week 2. That's coming up next on the Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the web, Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Let's talk about the good and the bad on offense. We always like to start with the good. Seth, what was the good that you liked from the offense overall?
I think the first thing you look at is just the continued ability and, like, transformation of the passing game. You saw Christian Kirk's best, you know, yardage game of his career. Larry Fitzgerald had another 100-yard, you know, receiving game. Damir Bird had a nice game. You know, Keyshawn Johnson had a nice game. So you saw... you know, Michael Crabtree had a couple, you know, targets and a catch. You saw everybody kind of pitching in that what we had talked about being a diverse, you know, wide receiver room that can catch a lot of passes. I mean, you look at it, Christian Kirk had 6, Damir Bird had 6, Fitz had 5. Chase Edmonds 2, Michael Crabtree 2, David Johnson 1, Keyshawn Johnson 1, Max Williams 1, Charles Clay 1. So, I mean, they really got everybody involved. I thought that was good and that was important.
For me, obviously, if there's one thing that you have to like about what the Cardinals are doing, Cliff Kingsbury is delivering on his passing offense. Kyler Murray's got over 300 yards in both of his first 2 starts. They're basically, you think of how just atrocious the Cardinals were offensively a year ago. The Cardinals are one of those teams. They are not a top scoring team, but I believe what they ranked right now, 21st, that is still so much better than they were a year ago. It's unbelievable. Remember, they scored a combined 6 points in their first 2 games a season ago. They have put up 27 and 17 points.
Yeah, and yeah, points for, they're 12th in the league right now. So, I mean, that's not bad. I mean, that's obviously offensive points scored, but that's not bad for them. That, you know, to see that change and like you said, going from, I think at the end of the year, they were averaging, what, 14 a game?
Ridiculous. It was so bad.
So they're up to 22 a game through two games. I mean, just two games in one. And honestly, they play two good defenses. That's the other thing that may get lost in this, is that the Lions just completely manhandled a Chargers team that a lot of people had, you know, predicted to go to the Super Bowl. The week before, you know, the Chargers scored 30 points on the Indianapolis Colts, and they could only put up 10 points on the Detroit Lions. So, I mean, the Cardinals are doing it against top-notch defenses thus far. That's, like you said, that's big. It's not, you know, obviously they haven't done enough to win, but it's the improvement that we were promised.
Right. They're moving the ball. The passing offense is as advertised. They're getting everyone involved. I mean, how can you not be thrilled with the production of Larry Fitzgerald, who's, well, you know, he's on pace for, I think, for after two games. No, first, he's never, ever had two 100-yard games to start a season in his career until this year. David Johnson's the only player to do it ever. The last time he had two consecutive 100-yard games was 2015. He is on pace at the moment. I know, it's, you know, pacing is ridiculous after two games, but based on two games, he's on pace for 104 catches for about 1,700. That is bonkers. And you look at Kyler Murray, who is on pace to completely obliterate the rookie passing yards record. Andrew Luck set the record with about more than 4,300. Murray's on pace for over 5,200, which is absurd, but completely believable because they continue to throw the ball a lot. They continue to be effective doing it. They're moving the ball. And this is, honestly, I've said this multiple times on the show, what I thought the offense would be. I thought they would end up being a very, very prolific moving the ball offense that would not score at the same rate at least this year. That is all looking to be true so far. I think they'll get fixed later on, but there's definitely plenty that you can like. But it's not everything good. And here's the thing. The offense isn't really good yet. The passing game is doing well. There are still some bad things. But what is your first bad in terms of the offense?
I think the first thing you look at is the, you know, I'd like to see them get their running backs more involved. I'm not even talking about running the ball. Even if they're just more involved in the passing game, especially near the goal line and things of that nature, in short yardage distances, there's a way to get them, you know, going in different directions. You look at that play, and I know we're talking about running backs, but you look at that play to Christian Kirk, where they sent him in a orbit motion and then brought him back out for the kind of like pseudo screen pass that got them down to the two. And you think to yourself, okay, well, why couldn't we have just done that with two backs and done, you know, the fake screen to David Johnson one way and then come back to Chase Edmonds the other way? Like, there's just so much that they can do. And you go back to Kingsbury's playbook at Texas Tech, and there's so many things he does with two running backs in. And so it's just a little baffling that they haven't done it yet. And it may be early and they're still working it in. I mean, you can only implement so much, and he had been at Texas Tech for, what, 6 years? So that's I get that it's a little bit different, but you would like to see just a little more involvement with the running backs, because they are too talented. They are two talented players that you'd like to see be able to get the ball a little more.
Obviously, for me, what is one of the major concerns is people are going to look at the pass-run ratio, and it's going to be concerning. it is a little extreme. I get. But they did a better job in week one. The running game hasn't been horrific. It was bad against Baltimore, but right now they're at a 3-1, so it's 75% pass. I'm with you that I want to see them get more involved, get the running backs more involved. I thought they did a good job in week one. Week two was not the same case. It was definitely not the same case. And so that's what I'm looking forward to moving forward. The other thing, obviously, the offensive line did not. So the bad, I think number one, we have to say the bad last week was Justin Murray. That did not go well in week two. He was manhandled by Judon. And, you know, he was doing admirably in a short period of time. But I think that game proved what he always was going to be. And that's a solid bit of depth, right? Do you think that was the case, right?
Yeah, it was a weird hire or signing to begin with, because he had to be on the active roster. Is it three games?
He doesn't.
Once,
it doesn't.
Once he claimed.
No, that's the practice squad rule.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, so, I mean, it was just a weird signing to begin with, because as you talked about before, you know, he's been in the league forever, 4 years. He's played in a couple of games, but he's never started. And then he was brought in to be kind of the lead backup, and then obviously Marcus Gilbert got hurt, and he's the man. And you look at it and you go, man, that was a interesting way to do it. And then they brought in Jordan Mills, and you felt like, okay, there's the, I guess, emergency breaking case, and we might be to that point already.
Yes. So another thing that, well, obviously, I think the one thing that we haven't seen that is good yet, it's still on the bad side, and that would be the red zone efficiency. So that's not something that's going to be able to keep going. And people talk about the play calling. They've started slow. I'm not surprised by Kingsbury's decision not to go for it in those situations. I will say that when you get inside the five, this was a little bit different. The one time that they had first and goal, like inside the five, they scored a touchdown. They've started at first and goal further back, and then by third down they're inside the five, and then they have it fill. And so I can see why they don't do that. They have the analytics. I don't know if I'd rather see them go for it more in those situations, because those field goals were critical. And I think he understands that. I think Cliff Kingsbury understands if you can't, in the NFL, you can't do everything like college, and you can't, you know, take points off the board, leave points out there when you have to. But in the end, I guess it is true, if one of them is unsuccessful and one of them is, then that's a net plus one over your decision to kick two field goals.
Yeah, and that's the difference right now. And you look at how efficient they've been on, and I know they've only done two, but how efficient they've been on two-point conversions and fourth downs, and they've done fourth and shorts, and they've done a really nice job, that it feels like those plays in the fourth and goal, especially goal to go under 5 yards, it feels like Kingsbury has enough tricks up his sleeve to really push the boundary on that. And so, you know, it's a bit disappointing, because you feel like you could have come away with a win, or at least put yourself to just need a field goal to win, as opposed to having to try to, you know, get down there for a touchdown. But again, we're nitpicking because they didn't win, when in general we expected them to hopefully not get blown out. So it's crazy to think that this is where our expectations are going. And that's such a good thing, because last year was, you know, obviously a complete 180, and we were doing the opposite of like lowering our expectations at this point, saying, okay, like maybe they'll be able to score points in this game, or because remember in that Rams game they didn't get past the 50-yard line until the fourth quarter.
So
this is like a complete 180.
It is. Coming up next on the Righty Red Podcast, we're going to go forward and talk about the defense, the good and bad defense. That's what's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red.
Okay.
We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And let's look at the defensive side of the ball, the good and the bad defensively. Let's look at the good. What did you feel the Cardinals did well on the defensive side of the ball?
I think the first thing they did well, and it was, you have to put like a caveat in it, but they did a really good job of stopping running backs on the run. They held down Mark Ingram and,
Edwards.
Oh, what's the other big running back? Edwards. Thank you. Gosh, I want to say Johnson, but that's the announcer. So, you know, you have to be excited about that because we were so concerned coming into this year. Everybody was pumping up Kerryon Johnson and Mark Ingram in fantasy leagues about, hey, like, you guys need these are easy points. Look how bad the Cardinals were against the run last year, blah, blah, blah. Now, I guess we can swing that to the bad as well, is that, Lamar Jackson just ate them alive running the football. So, as good as it was that they were able to hold down the running backs, it was just as bad that Chandler Jones, Terrell Suggs, Cassius Marsh, and then the bevy of inside linebackers were just worked over by Lamar Jackson in this game.
That is true. The good, obviously, is the run defense, at least the base run defense that the Cardinals have. It looks good. They've done well against the running backs. They haven't been. The problem is Matthew Stafford was able to run on him. Lamar Jackson. I mean, Lamar Jackson is going to get some of his. It's like Russell Wilson.
I think Lamar Jackson led the NFL in rushing this week.
Oh, jeez.
I could be wrong about that, but
he put on a clip. I mean, let's go. He has now. Seth, by the way, Jackson was Seth's QB1 in that draft, and he looks like the most promising of those quarterbacks from a year ago. And that includes Baker Mayfield right now. Lamar Jackson this year looks like the special sort of player. What we think that Kyler Murray is essentially going to do, I think Lamar Jackson has a leg up right now because his throwing ability has improved greatly. And his running, he still is, I mean, wow. there was nowhere out there. It seemed almost impossible to defend. And you look at how the Cardinals did defensively. When you look at the results, because it felt like the Ravens were mostly ever able to do everything they wanted to do. Because Jackson was efficient in passing the ball. He hurt them with his legs. And they were good on third down. They were converted on 50% of their third down. So, in terms of the good, well, there was. I'm going to point to Byron Murphy. He continues to impress for his play in coverage. He's physical, we know that, but he is not getting him out there. He isn't playing too physical out there, which was kind of the thing. Because Patrick Peterson, his rookie year, he was really grabby, and he got flagged a lot for holding, for pass interference, because he was really grabby. Byron Murphy, so far this year, you get Patrick Peterson back.
You have to be excited.
Oh, my goodness. And then you get Robert Alford back. You might not have to have Tremaine Brock on the field.
And then you do have a really talented secondary. I mean, there's obviously issues. I thought, you know, Chandler Jones probably had his worst game as an Arizona Cardinal. I think you and I could agree with that, don't you think?
Agreed. Well, one, he didn't get to the quarterback. Two,
at all.
Yeah, I know. And he broke contain too many times. Like, he was trying to get to the quarterback, and he failed. And it was Lamar Jackson. It was two or three different times that he broke free because Chandler lost his containment.
Right. And so you look at that, and you just – I mean, you just watch him – And it was just – it was a bad day, and it happens. I mean, he's been – he hasn't actually been an All-Pro, but he's been, you know, a borderline All-Pro the entire time as a Cardinal. He's going to have bad games, and so
– And Ronnie Stanley is no slouch at right tackle. That I mean, left tackle. So that's, there's something there.
No. No, and that's the thing. Is so, yeah, you look at that, but he just had a bad day. And I thought I thought Terrell Suggs had a bad game. I mean, He played poorly as well. It was a tough game for the linebackers. I'll say six of them. Brooks Reed only got like five snaps, but you look at it and Jordan Hicks after week one where he was really 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 good, he struggled.
Hassan Reddick, volume tackles. He had the tackles, but it wasn't. Right. He didn't have anything behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, a lot of them were 8, 10, 12 yards down the field. Hassan Reddick made two really nice plays coming downhill. And I think he had a pass deflection, but he also was worked over in coverage. And then he struggled to mirror and shadow Lamar. They put Joe Walker in there. And I guess we can say this is the other negative about the defense. Joe Walker got some time. Hassan Reddick got time. Obviously, Jordan Hicks was in for all of the snaps. They brought in Chris Jones. They brought in Deontay Thompson. They tried anything and everything, and Mark Andrews just ate them alive from the tight end position.
That's a concern because that's 2 weeks in a row. TJ Hawkinson, Mark Andrews, and guess who's coming to town this week? Greg Olsen, who is one of the best to ever play that position. Now, granted, he's older. They might not have Cam Newton, but the tight end position was overall pretty disappointing as a position last year outside of Rob Gronkowski and George Kittle. The Cardinals are putting the stats back into the tight ends.
Yeah, they really are, and it's been a
Can you imagine? Oh no, those games against the 49ers. George Kittle?
Yeah, George Kittle. Well even you look at the Seahawks with Will Disley. He's played extremely well the last couple of games. And so you look at it, and it's one of those situations where it could be just an issue all season. And you know, that has been kind of my issue with Reddick, was that's what he was brought in for. But it was unfair to expect him to be able to adjust because he never did it, right? Like, he never was asked to cover tight ends and running backs as a college player, and so now he's asked to do it as a pro, and it's just, you can see it's been a struggle, and he hasn't really adjusted and adapted, and so that makes it tough. So you just, you know, you look at it, and you kind of go, and you understand that maybe that's going to be a weak spot all season, and I don't know at this point if there's anything you can do about
it. Which, by the way, when Todd Bowles was here, that was a concern. Tight ends were a concern under Todd Bowles. James Betcher, though, it seemed to get things fixed. James Betcher had better success for whatever reason, but maybe that's just one of the holes in Vance Joseph's defense. Depending on the personnel that you have, and maybe, and honestly, this could be the result of not being able to just man press the outside receivers like they want to, Alfred and Peterson, and having to them more help them like that. Maybe they are unable. That leaves them vulnerable to tight ends as well. The other thing for me, which is bad, is it was better in week one, but it's not good in week two, and that was their third down defense. They just weren't able to get off the field. Now, granted, part of it was, you know, that first drive by the Ravens, they didn't even get to third down, but then they were 7-14 13 over the game. You cannot. You can't expect to do well and give up 50% of your third downs end up in first downs.
Right, and they've been long distances too. So they're not even like third and shorts. So that makes it a lot more difficult when you're giving up big conversions, because in the end what ends up happening is then you have to blitz, and so if you're not blitzing and getting there, then you end up kind of struggling like they did to get off on certain downs. And so here's what I'll give them. They've done a nice job bending but not breaking, but they sure are bending a whole lot.
And, you know, early in the season, a new defensive system. It's better than a year ago.
But they're also without two of their best players. That's the thing, is how limited is this defense right now without Robert Alford and without Patrick Peterson. And so you look at that, they get them back, and all of a sudden you feel like maybe there's a little bit more. And we had this conversation, you know, about Darius Falon and who would step up, and it's been everybody. I mean, Zach Allen's played well, but Clinton McDonald played well this week.
Corey Peters had a sack and a shimmy.
Miles Brown got 7 snaps. I mean, they're getting contributions from everybody on the defensive line, and the positions we were most concerned about actually aren't playing as poorly as the positions that were supposed to be locked down, which is, I think, good, because I think we can expect the 4 linebackers to play better, can't we?
You'd hope so. You'd hope so. I think the Baltimore game probably was more of an anomaly from Jones and Suggs, just based on what we've seen from Chandler Jones over the last 3 years. Terrell Suggs probably will be up and down at his age. The inside backers will continue to be a concern. So hopefully that gets turned around. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to done talking about the offense, the defense. It's time to talk about David Johnson. That wrist injury, what is there to be concerned about? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. There was a little bit of scare in the first half of the game on Sunday when David Johnson left the game, and it was his wrist, which was the same wrist that caused him to lose the entire 2016 season. 2017 season. And he eventually came back into the game, but he rarely used after that. He says after the game, he was just a little scared. It felt weird. He's cautionary. Everything's fine. Cliff Kingsbury says he's good to go. However, the report comes out on Tuesday. The Cardinals brought in 3 running backs, Alfred Morris, Thomas Rawls, and Zach Zenner. Not that Zach Zenner is anything to get excited about, but with that, how much concern do you have about that wrist? Are they downplaying it? Is this due diligence? Or are we looking at a Carolina Panthers game with a limited David Johnson?
I think we could have a limited David Johnson, and that's unfortunate, but he's been kind of slow this last game. He wasn't as elusive as you'd hope. And so you kind of look at it and you wonder if they're able to maybe get a little more of Chase Edmonds in there and kind of utilize him a little more. It is concerning because he is such a valuable part to this offense, and they really need him to be out there and available at 100%. so they're able to kind of use the full force of the offense, you know, because we saw they didn't utilize the running game very much. There wasn't a ton of running room, but I think you had a good point that they saw David struggling and kind of got away from it.
Right. Between his injury, the effectiveness being down, and honestly, that passing game is going to be the bread and butter of this team this year. Cliff Kingsbury said, obviously, the ideal situation is 50-50. But that 50-50 is going to come when they build a lead. They're going to try and run a little bit early. They're going to pass the ball in the middle. And if they've got a win, they're going to run the ball late. And that's how they're going to get their balance. I'm not of like, I don't think that they have to force the run. They just need, and Bruce Arians said this, you know, you don't need a dominant running game. You need an effective running game. You need the threat of a running game to open the passing game. And we know in this league, it's a passing league. But once you open up the pass and you've got a lead, as long as you're not down by more than one score, that's when they wicks the run in, and it then makes your offense that much more efficient. Am I concerned about David Johnson? Yes. I'm concerned, like, when you bring in a guy like Alfred Morris, you bring in a vet like that. Thomas Rawls, maybe they're just kicking the tires because he hasn't done anything since rookie year. And Zach Zenner is a nice complimentary piece. The thing I find interesting to me is the lip service they keep giving Chase Edmonds in terms of how they feel about him dating back to last season as a rookie. They keep saying great things about him. But when it came to act, when David Johnson was out of the game and Chase Edmonds had 24 snaps offense, they gave him exactly one carry and threw the ball to him twice. So while they say they trust him, they clearly do not trust him at the same level, or even anywhere near the same level as David Johnson. Even though he does some things a little bit better than Johnson. He's not afraid to block. Johnson sometimes misses some things. He's still not a great blocker. Edmonds' first steps are quicker. Johnson, I believe, is trying to run patiently, Le'Veon Bell style. Chase gets a better first step. But it's clear that they don't feel he is quite ready or ever will be ready to shoulder the load of an offense.
Yeah, and you wonder if they're concerned about his ability to shoulder a load and that he's more of a true change of pace back, and they only feel like they can use him if the running game's completely working, and you know, we just haven't seen that yet. And, you know, that's what I was talking about earlier. We haven't exactly seen the full arsenal of this offense yet, at least what they did or what he did at Texas Tech. So I think in the end you're going to see more, and we're just kind of in a holding pattern as they continue to work into and more of the offense, and that includes, you know, like the Chase Edmonds section. And I just don't know if we're there yet, and that's what the issue is, because I think that there's a lot more, we just haven't completely got there.
If given the choices, who would you rather, if the Cardinals end up signing one of these guys, who do you like? Alfred Morris, Thomas Rawls, Zach Zenner? Alfred Morris obviously has had the much better career. He started off in the NFL 3 1,000-yard seasons. He's obviously premier back anymore. He's unemployed. Thomas Rawls, I don't think he's got really anything left in him. That would be one of those time signs where they're kind of hoping he's got the magic in him. You know, he's completely healthy because injuries have been a problem for him. And Zach Zenner, that would tell me they're more concerned about Chase Edmonds than anything else, or they're looking to upgrade DJ Foster, who hasn't played a single snap on offense played special teams. Zach Zenner is a really nice complimentary piece who can kind of do some things that the Cardinals remember, that, you know, he sort of ran over the Cardinals in some action with the Lions the last couple of years.
I think Rawls would be the most, if you need a David Johnson type replacement, I think Rawls would be make the most sense, because he's a guy that's actually done it. If you're just looking for kind of a guy to be a more backup in case if they're truly going to give Chase Edmonds some work, I think Zenner makes sense. I don't know if I'm even interested in Alfred Morris, simply because it's just he's older, and I'm not sure he's got enough left in the tank to fit into this system. So,
well, coming up to the Rise Up Sea Rib podcast, we're going to talk about the schedule and moving forward, because the NFL suddenly the outlook has changed with some injuries to the quarterback position. So let's look at what that means to Cardinals coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Rib podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Rib podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Quarterback injuries, and they're not involving the Arizona Cardinals for once. So it's not Carson Palmer going down. It's not Drew Stanton going down. It's not Josh Rosen getting hurt. It's not Sam Bradford getting hurt. But quarterbacks are getting hurt around the league. The most notable ones, Roethlisberger, out for the season. Drew Brees, out 6-ish weeks, has to have surgery on his thumb. Ben Roethlisberger has to have Tommy John surgery. Sam Darnold for the Jets came down with a case of mono. And then Trevor Siemian banged up his ankle. He's done for the year. We're seeing injuries across the league. Cam Newton might miss this game against the Cardinals with an re-aggravated foot injury. So we've got three. Oh, and then on top of that, it's not an injury, but now the Giants have benched Eli Manning. The Cardinals will face Daniel Jones when they head to the Meadowlands, or whatever they call that now, in week seven. What does this mean for the Cardinals moving forward? Now, does this make their schedule better?
You know, you look at it, and conceivably you would think so, but I think the way Cam Newton's played this year, you'd prefer to see the banged-up iteration of this Cam Newton rather than a healthy Kyle Allen. It makes a difference in whether they win or lose, but I feel like the way Newton's played the first two games and how hobbled he is, and you can see he's lost a little bit on his fastball. I think you would prefer to see this version of Cam Newton. When you talk about Eli, it's the same type of thing. He's so bad now. I don't really know. I mean, obviously Daniel Jones can be worse, but they're getting what, three games in before they play the Cardinals now. So he's gonna, you know, it's not gonna be his first game. He's going to struggle this week because Todd Bowles is going to eat him alive. But he gets a game against Todd Bowles. He gets quite a few games for the Cardinals. So on to.
But he gets Patrick Peterson.
Yeah.
So if he tests Patrick at all, that's going to be fun.
And now all of a sudden this Saints game looks winnable for the Cardinals too, with Teddy Bridgewater, because they looked not good with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. And that doesn't mean they won't get better, but if it's truly, you know, a 6-week thing, that's after the Cardinals game. So
right, they are week six.
Yeah, so
week six of that 6-week period.
And again, you know, Patrick Peterson's back. So you look at it, and then the Falcons are another. I mean, I know we're talking quarterbacks, but you look at the Falcons. They looked awful on the road, and then they looked really good at home, and the Cardinals get them on the road. You look at the Bengals, they just got blown out at home by San Francisco. I know they played Seattle first, but they look like there's a ton of question marks. And so you kind of look at it now and you go, okay, Carolina, they pulled the odds, but before the Cam news came out, you know, Carolina was a 2.5-point favorite. I feel like the Cardinals can win that game. You know, against Seattle, it's always close. I mean, they almost won when it's at home. They almost beat Seattle at home last year with Steve Wilkes. I mean, the Bengals game is going to be a really good test, because if they're coming off two wins and they're sitting at 2-1-1, and you have to travel to Cincinnati, it's not technically East Coast, but it's East Coast-ish, right? And it's an early game. It's a 10 a.m. start. You really are looking at that and going, that'll be the sign of whether this is a good team or just an improved team. Because I think if they win the next two games, you have to state that this is clearly an improved team from last year. I mean, we already know that, but, you know, I would say
there were wins to show for it.
Right, but
more than just against a 49ers team that was dreadful, and then a Packers team that had given up.
Well, yeah, that was trying to get their coach fired. So you look at that. So that Bengals game, I think, if they're coming off two wins, is going to tell us a whole lot about who they are, because all of a sudden it's not the Ravens, right? It's the Bengals, and they look like they're one of the five worst teams in the NFL right now. And you get them, it's on the road, but you're going to go in there and have a chance to really kind of put a mark on what type of team you are this year. If you're going to be a competitive team as the season goes along, or if you're just kind of you're entertaining. And I think that's good to know, because then we can kind of reset our focus, because that'll be five games in. And we'll be able to say, hey, this is a team that, you know, if they're sitting at 3-1-1 when they host Atlanta, you feel a lot better about that than if they're, you know, 1-2-1, is that right? Yeah, no, 1-3-1 or 2-2-1, like you. So that's kind of the difference. If they're coming off three wins and all of a sudden you're like, hey, this is a team that, you know, the Falcons they can beat, the Giants they can beat, the Saints. You feel like there's a winnable game, even if it's in New Orleans, as long as Drew Brees isn't back. They host the 49ers. The Buccaneers are, I mean, I haven't been impressed with the Buccaneers yet. And then you get the Steelers and Browns at home, and neither of those teams look good right now. The Browns won, but, I mean, they were...
It was against Luke Falk, let's be honest.
Right, well, and they were two huge Odell Beckham Jr. plays away from being really kind of overmatched against a Greg Williams defense. And so you're hoping that doesn't really have any talent at corners. So you're hoping by the time, you know, the Browns are in town, that Robert Alford's back, Patrick Peterson will be back and be at full speed. And so now all of a sudden you're saying, okay, let's revisit this after Cincinnati. Let's revisit who this team is and what our expectation levels are. Because I think now it's easy to say, hey, this is a winnable game, because they've played well the first 2 weeks. Whereas if we're sitting here after Cincinnati and they only beat Carolina, or, you know, they win the two games at home and then get blown out on the road by what is probably a bad Bengals team, we're going to go, okay, they're not quite there yet. They still have clearly a lot of work to do. So, you know, that Steelers game, that Browns game, they're not going to be as winnable as we may expect. But if they're sitting, you know, if they beat Cincinnati and they're sitting at 3-1-1, we're going to go, all right, all of a sudden these games that we had kind of penciled in as L's, Now we're just going to erase it. We're not going to pencil in anything, but now we're going to erase it because we feel like this team has a chance to compete.
And this season, come the year, they have a very formidable list of quarterbacks to face. Obviously, they're going to Russell Wilson and Jared Goff. But Matthew Stafford, I didn't put Lamar Jackson in that category yet because he's not super established. Looks great. So Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger. So you've got some big names, Baker Mayfield. Now those names are changing. Cam Newton. Now it's changing to potentially Kyle Allen, Teddy Bridgewater, and Mason Rudolph. Which,
and that's the thing is, so like, you listen to Pittsburgh fans, they're not, they're, and obviously, I mean, we didn't even talk about this, but Pittsburgh just traded a first round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick to the Miami Dolphins, and the question was posed to me by a group text I'm in, is that a top five pick? Like, could that end up being a top five pick? And so clearly the Steelers don't feel like they're done, but it sure looks worse from the outside, I would say. Obviously, we'll see as it's kind of plays out, but I would say thus far, you look at it and you go, hey, this is a team that you can expect to at least have a good chance to beat. I mean, they were drilled by the Patriots, and then they lost at home to Seattle. It wasn't a road game. I mean, if that game's in Seattle and they lose, we're not surprised, right? But it was in Pittsburgh. And I know it's Mason Rudolph, but still, it was in Pittsburgh, right?
Well, and you can't exactly just pen in those wins. They have to be questionable. The Cardinals don't have a great history against backup quarterbacks. Let's look at the history that they've had. They lost. Well, this was the Landry Jones game with the Steelers comes to mind. They've lost to Greg McElroy. They, again, that was also in part because it was Ryan Lindley. They've lost they lost to Vinny Testaverde a long time ago. They lost to Jimmy Garoppolo. Luckily they didn't lose to Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard, so they've got that to do. They've got that going for them. But it's not like they have set the world on fire and taken advantage of backup quarterbacks. I mean, Jacoby Brissett a few years ago, they squeaked out an overtime win against.
Yeah, and so you look at it, I think that's the whole thing, is that this is, it gives them a better opportunity to be successful. But as you said, it's not, there's no guarantee, and that's why I said, I don't think we can properly, I mean, if they lose the next two games, then obviously that Bengals game doesn't matter. But if they're able to win one or both of these next two games and then go into that Bengals game, that's where we can set our expectations, because then all of a sudden the expectations change. Because if you beat the Bengals and let's say they're 0-4 at that point, then you change your expectation to they should.
Yeah, they
right?
should be in the mix. They should be competitive and be in the mix.
And so that's the only thing that's changing. This isn't, we're still not 2015 Cards. But what we're doing is we're saying, hey, like, these next three games can reestablish our expectation levels for this team in this season. And maybe all of a sudden in the NFC, where it seems kind of wide open, doesn't it? Like, it doesn't seem like, I mean, I guess the Cowboys and the Rams have been the best two teams thus far, but like that the NFC North doesn't seem quite as tough as we expected. I mean, hell, the NFC West has 3-2-0 teams so far. The NFC East seems, I mean, I don't know what to make of the Eagles. And so you just look at it, and then the NFC South in ruins already. I mean, is a 9-7 team may win that division. So there's a lot of question marks to the NFC this year, and all of a sudden it may be wide open enough where, you know, the Cardinals just need to find a way to start stacking wins, and then but first things first, they have to win a game, and so that's kind of where it starts. It has to start this week, and then you go from there.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the matchup against the Carolina Panthers now in week three. Break it down, that sort of thing. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast for the last segment of the show. So let's talk about the Panthers. So if they aren't without, if they do end up going without Cam Newton, what do we need to worry about offensively? I think we can look at two players in particular, that Christian McCaffrey, who had a huge week one and was not nearly as effective in week two. Greg Olsen at tight end will be a concern. But where else do we have to watch offensively for the Panthers?
Kyle Allen started one game last year as a rookie. I believe he was a rookie. And he wasn't bad. I mean, they won the game. He was 20 of 31 for 266 yards, two touchdowns. So I think he is good enough to keep them in the game, kind of that career backup, that Drew Stanton type guy. The completion percentage is a little better than Drew Stanton, but a guy that is good enough to get you 2 to 3 weeks where you're not going to just completely fall apart. And that means that all of a sudden guys like Greg Olsen and Christian McCaffrey are still huge problems, but now all of a sudden a guy like Curtis Samuel, who has been open quite a bit the first two games and has not gotten much production because of the quarterback play of Carolina, now all of a sudden you're worried about him as a burner on the outside. I mean, I know the Cardinals have not gotten killed or didn't get killed this week deep. I mean, Marquise Brown had a nice game, but it wasn't like they were just, you know, destroyed like they were by Danny Amendola in that game. DJ Moore's had an okay season so far. He's in his second year. Allegedly, the Cardinals were really high on him per John Gambadoro. So you look at it, you know, he's had 165 yards through the first two games. He's kind of similar to Christian Kirk in the way they utilize him. Samuel's the big play guy that could kind of get loose, and that's the one guy that worries me, because I'm of the opinion you're not going to stop. You're not going to stop McCaffrey. I've just given up all hope on stopping Greg Olsen. So the thing is can you contain Curtis Samuel? Can you keep the big play from happening? And that's going to be what is interesting to watch, because they have in the first game, they gave up two big plays, and then, you know, kind of the one blown coverage, but the Amendola and Hawkinson were big plays. In the second game, it was one, right? It was just the Mark Andrews, and that was what, 33 yards or something like that. And so you look at it, they were able to cut down on it, but they were nickel and dime to death by the Ravens. And so you assume that's going to probably play out similar again with Kyle Allen, Moore, Christian McCaffrey, Greg Olsen. So the big thing is going to be, are you, because we talked about earlier, they're clearly a bend but don't break defense. So the guy that can break it is Samuel. That's the guy that kind of worries me on offense. Defensively, obviously, it's Luke Kuechly's show. We're all just living in it. I mean, that dude is...
He's a force.
I mean, he's one of the right, he's one of the greatest linebackers that's ever played. He's absolutely phenomenal. Burns has been a terror for the Panthers the first 2 weeks. They have a really nice defensive line rotation right now. So they still have, obviously, Kawan Short, you know, that's the guy everybody knows. But they brought in Dontari Poe. He's had a nice two games for them in his first season with them. And then they brought in, Gerald McCoy. And so they've got, you know, a three-man rotation that's really, really talented and can push interior pocket. Justin Pugh and J.R. Sweezy have played well, I think, the first two games. I think they've played better than anybody expected them to. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. Sweezy's been pretty solid, aside from, you know, trying to dump Booker Murray in that one play.
Yeah.
Both his holding penalties have been very questionable.
Right, and so, you know, they've been playing well. A.Q. Shipley was really bad last game. You know, we can say that. And so that's the concern if they're lining up somebody directly on Shipley. Is he going to be able to hold up, especially with that rotation? I mean, Short, Poe, and McCoy, that's, like I said, that's a really formidable trio that they're able to rotate. Burns, you know, through two games, he only has one sack, but he's got four quarterback hits already. He's got a tackle for loss. He's a Gumby out there, and he's going to be a problem. And then the guy that's played extremely well through 2 weeks has been James Bradbury, their top cornerback. And so the question will be, who gets Bradbury? Is he moving around with one guy, or is he going to play one side of the field? If he's on the one side of the field, he moved around quite a bit with Mike Evans. He had a nice game against Evans. I mean, the one big play Evans had, it was similar coverage to what Tremaine Brock had on Marquise Brown on that last throw of the game, where you go, okay, that beat us. I mean, you're upset, but you understand, like, a great throw is always going to beat great coverage. And that was the Bradbury catch to Mike Evans. I think it was like 42 yards. And the rest of the game, Evans had 61 total yards that game. I mean, Bradbury can be a game changer as a big, kind of strong defensive back. He's the type that I think could give Fitz problems if they line him up, because he's not the quick guy. He's more of the physical guy. And we've seen this year quite a bit. I don't think the Cardinals, or they finally got one pass interference call on that goal line, and I thought that was the weakest one of the, you know, more docile plays that we've seen. So you kind of look at it, you know, offensively, Curtis Samuel, and then defensively, James Bradbury. Like, are they able to take advantage of the other secondary guys? Because that defensive line is going to do work. They have done it all their whole careers. That's why they've all three been all pros at one point. Burns is gonna, you know, man, Justin Murray's gonna have a tall task if he's starting again. You saw that he struggled with Matt Judon, and Burns is even more athletic. So you know, the question is going to become, are they able to get the running game going? If it's just Chase Edmonds, are they able to get a little running game going and slow down Burns on the corner? Will we see more Kyler Murray design runs? We haven't really seen that yet. It's been a couple plays, but again, it's something that maybe they just haven't had time to implement. And then, you know, defensively, they have to get after Kyle Allen. You know, if it's Cam, they're gonna get hits on him, because he's immobile right now.
Chandler Jones should have a big game. I was just on a podcast with a bunch of Pats people. Darrell Williams has struggled. That would be something.
Yeah,
that,
he's really struggled.
And so Chandler Jones needs to take advantage of that.
Yep. And so that's the whole thing right now, is they need, you know, they need the pass rush to get back to what it was against Detroit. They can give up yardage. That's the thing. This isn't going to be a shutdown defense. They're not talented enough. They don't have enough talent right now. You know, maybe later in the season they can, but just right now they lack the horses. But they need to be a big play defense, and that was what was lacking in the Baltimore game. There was zero big plays. I mean, there was the one Corey Peters sack. I know Zach Allen had a sack, but like there was zero sack fumbles. They had three the previous game. They've had no interceptions thus far. That's got to change. They have to speed up the quarterback. They played, as you said earlier, they've played two good to great quarterbacks thus far. If you get either a hobbled Cam Newton or a red, or a green Kyle Allen, you have to take advantage of that, and you have to create turnovers. Cam's been throwing them, so that's why I'm not opposed to Cam playing. Like, I'm not in the same boat as other people where they're like, oh, I love to play Kyle Allen, because I just think Cam's so banged up that it is probably a benefit if he plays over Kyle Allen. Now, he may go out there and prove me wrong, and I'll tip my cap to him, but at this point, that's kind of where I'm at.
I predict the Cardinals will come away with their first win of the year. I think they'll be able to, because I think they will get out to an earlier lead, and I think they pull out this game 27-17. What are your thoughts?
I think they're going to win this game. I think we're going to see the best offensive display of the season thus far, and they're going to be able to kind of control a Panthers team that's, I think they're at the end of the Ron Rivera, Cam Newton era. And so I think they're going to win like 35-21.
And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast, episode 239. When we come back next week, hopefully we're going to talk about a win. We will be back in a week. We're going to talk about how the game went against the Panthers, any news that we've got, and then look ahead to the Seattle Seahawks. As always, thanks for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Go Cardinals. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.